We're gonna have
I got
to
claims committee. I don't want to go to that.
I'd like to get back to my office. I know. I'd like to go over my.
I saw the list.
Get those into Diane early in the morning.
I didn't even find my agenda already.
Are you? Got a group of changes into her, and I haven't been able to get back to look at them. She's probably got it done. I was hoping to do that tonight, so
confirmation.
Be with Thomas Oney at have the current copy.
Papers on.
This meeting of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. I think this is the last hearing we have. We have two confirmations for the EQB, Kate Knuth and John Saxhog. If you want to start out, you're welcome to come up at the same time. Welcome to the committee, and I don't care which one of you goes first. Kate, you're listed first, so maybe you want to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs and Mr. Chair and members. My name's Kate Knuth. Do you want me to introduce myself? Or?
Briefly, sure.
Okay. And I appreciate the committee hearing for the confirmation hearing. I have served 2 years on the Environmental Quality Board. I was appointed to fill out part of a term, and appreciate being reappointed by Governor Dayton. My professional background is in the environmental area and education. I currently work at the Institute on the Environment at the University of Minnesota. I run a leadership development program for graduate students from all different areas of the university who want to work on environmental issues. And then I also am working on my own PhD in conservation biology. I also served in the State House, where I worked on a number of energy and environment committees. And I'm really value serving on the Environmental Quality Board because of its unique position in state government. It is a place where commissioners from the state agencies that have interest issues that are related to the environment somehow are part of the board along with the citizen members. And we're a place where we can coordinate and discuss issues that clearly cross the kind of silos we create. And I think that's really an important part of our work on the board. And we also provide an opportunity for citizen engagement and reviewing various but looking at different environmental issues, and then clearly the environmental review parts of the board. So I hope to be reappointed again, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Saxhog. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you for asking me here today for confirmation. I have served 4 years, and this will be a reappointment for me. And I'm very excited about spending another 4 years on the EQB. Just to briefly go over my background, I'm from northern Minnesota, Grand Rapids. I graduated from high school up there and came down and graduated from the University of Minnesota on the St. Paul campus with a Bachelor of Science degree in forestry. My career has basically been in what I call conservation real estate. I started working for Potlatch Corporation in Cloquet years ago when they were a consolidated wood products firm. I spent 13 years with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources in land acquisition, appraisal, and realty management. And then I finished my career with 12 years with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, where I was also in land acquisition. And I retired a year ago as a supervisor for Region 3, which is the Midwest area, in land acquisition. I'm presently at the university as a graduate student in forest ecology and enjoying that. Some of my volunteer experiences have been on the board of directors of YMCA Camp Widgiewagon, Minnesota Forestry Association, and I'm a registered tree farmer. Again, before finishing, I just want to say something about my experience with the EQB. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve with this group. It's a group of five citizen members who I'm continually impressed with, Citizen Knuth being one of them, with their dedication and their background, the nine commissioners who I also am very impressed with and who work together so well on this board, and that's not always the case, that a group like that can work together well. And then the EQB staff, Bob Patton and now Will Soyford as executive directors, very impressive people, and the staff has done an outstanding job. They're able to accomplish a lot with limited resources, and I would very much like to serve with them for another 4 years. I ask for your consideration. Thank you. And I'd like to answer questions if you have any.
Questions from Mr. Saxo. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, appropriate, I'd like to move the confirmations.
Is there any discussion? If not, Senator Sieben moves that Catherine Knut and John Saxhog be recommended to the full Senate for confirmation, reconfirmation to the Minnesota EQB. Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Chair, for your willingness
to serve and your continued willingness to serve, and we wish you the best in your work there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Oh.
I should be doing that.
Senator Marty, Senate File 1735.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senate File 1735 is a bill we discussed about 3 weeks ago. We amended it and then took the language from that bill and put it into the omnibus, energy bill, which is on the floor right now. And at the time, I indicated that because there were lots of discussions going on, particularly on both parts of the bill, but that I would like to have us, there were long-term negotiations going on the multi-year rate provision of the bill, and I suggested maybe what we ought to do is take the bill up and consider it separately now. I realize this bill would go to Rules Committee from here because of deadline, but I think that we've come up with some language for both provisions I think is good language that I'd like to push, and again, because this is not the first hearing and we've already discussed the issue, I'm not going to suggest these as author's amendments. They're amendments I want to offer, but I think we should discuss them. And I will suggest we start with the A4 amendment, Mr. Chair.
So Senator Marty moves the A4 amendment. And that is in your packets, members.
And Mr. Chair, I would incorporate one oral amendment on page 1, line 22. We would strike shall and insert may.
So Senator Marty modifies the A4 to strike the word shall and replace that with the word may on line 1.22.
And Mr. Chair, perhaps maybe the way to deal with this, I think some of the testimony on this bill is related to the general subject, not necessarily to the changes in this, but as such, maybe we want to take the testimony, and it looks like I think about half the testimony is onto this amendment portion of the bill, the multi-year rate proposal, and perhaps we could just start with the testimony on that, and then when we get through people who wanted to testify on this part, then act on the A4 amendment. And then
Very good.
The same for the other one.
All right.
So maybe Rick Evans from Xcel Energy first.
All right. So members, I believe you have the agenda in front of you as well as members of the audience. So we'll just go in the order in which folks' names are listed there. And so we'll start with Mr. Evans from Xcel. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I testified on the earlier version of this bill, and I'll try to get through testimony quickly. I know you have other people to hear from today. First of all, I want to focus the committee's attention on what this bill is not. This bill is not in any way, shape, or form a deregulation of rate structure in the electric utility. It is an alternative way of doing rates as we go forward. It is not a required system of rate regulation. It is voluntary with the utility whether they want to apply for a multi-year rate plan. and it is not a requirement that the Public Utilities Commission accept a multi-year rate plan or any part of the multi-year rate plan. It is permissive. It allows us as a utility to propose a multi-year performance-based rate plan, and it allows the Public Utility Commission to review it and approve it, modify it, or deny it as they see fit in their role as the rate regulator. We've had a multi-year rate plan on the statute since, I think, about 4 years ago when Senator Benson was the author of the original multi-year rate plan. That permitted rate plans to go for 3 years and didn't have a lot of other detail about how the plan would work. And so what we're trying to do with this bill is expand a little bit on the kinds of things that can be included in a multi-year rate plan. I also want to just mention something because I think, you know, people who are relatively new to rate regulation in Minnesota may lose sight of this. One of the problems we're trying to address here is the fact that utilities, and certainly Xcel Energy among them, are coming back year after year after year in rate cases. We've had a rate case going on. We're just about to have one finished this spring by the PUC, and we're already planning our next one to be filed in November. This is a circumstance that's arisen because of a lot of things, some of which are good, like the fact that our load is not growing, our customers are conserving, things are happening that allow us that allow us to not be having to add a lot of generation infrastructure, but we still have to maintain the system in a system that's not growing, and that's what's required us to come back year after year with rate cases. But that's not the way the system was designed. Most of the time, at least in history, as this kind of rate regulation was designed, utilities would go for many, many years. I've heard of utilities go up to 20 years without filing a rate case because the rates they got were sufficient for their purposes. It's interesting to note that when Xcel Energy was formed, when NSP Minnesota merged into the company that's now Xcel Energy, one of the conditions that the state of Minnesota put on Xcel Energy if they were going to do this merger was that they couldn't come back to a rate case for 7 years. So this idea of having a rate case every single year where, you know, all of our spending is examined down to fine detail year after year after year is not the model. It's the deviation, and it's the deviation we're trying to fix in part with this bill. It's not all the bill does, but it's one of the important things that it does is it gets both the utility and the Public Utilities Commission and the Department of Commerce out of this constant stream of rate cases, interim rates, rebates, interim rates, refunds, and the constant rate situation of being in a rate case, which takes up an enormous amount of time and an enormous amount of resources to do. So this bill would permit the utility to propose up to a 5-year multi-year rate plan. It would, in the first year of a 5-year plan, we would set rates very much like we do now, with a very close look at the costs, the proposed costs, and the kinds of things that the utility is going to spend money on, what their projected load is going to be to come up with a rate. So in that respect, in the first year, not much would change over what we have now. But what this bill would allow to happen then is for the utility to propose and the PUC to consider putting those rates on some kind of a formula going forward, tying them to an index or tying them to a formula that would allow the utility to that would allow the rates to go up in a gradual and moderate way over the 5-year period, or possibly go down, though that's not expected that would be what would come of it. But rather than having us come in with another rate case, more interim rates, and then another refund and back and forth for the next 5 years, it would put us on a steady pattern of rates. We think this is helpful to our customers, particularly our commercial industrial customers, because it gives them predictability and stability in their rates going forward. We think it's helpful to the utility and to the regulators because it allows us to spend time on things other than constantly coming back in for rate cases. And if we set if the formula is acceptable to the Public Utilities Commission, and of course that would happen in the public hearing with all of the interveners able to come in and talk about whether it's the right formula or whether the formula should be there at all or whether it should be 5 years or 3 years, all of those things would be taken up in a very public process, just like a rate case is now. So no one is left out, no one isn't allowed to comment, no one is unable to have their opinion expressed on how this would work. And then once that rate plan is locked in for 5 years, it would be the utility's responsibility to manage within that rate plan. So it gives the utilities an incentive to manage their business, you know, to keep their costs down and to manage their business well so that they stay within the rate plan that's been set. The bill does allow for interim rates. We still need to have interim rates. We expect it will take a year or more for a five-year rate plan to be approved, and so you would need to have the interim rates for that period of time that the plan is being considered. But if the plan works for 5 years, you stay out of interim rates for the next 4 years, and we think that's an advantage. I know that Attorney General and other offices have problems with interim rates. We understand it's an imperfect solution to the problem of regulatory lag, but we think that the multi-year rate plan actually helps solve that problem by keeping the utility out of interim rates for up to 5 years. And the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that at no time during any of the five-year plan does the PUC lose control over the rates of the utility. The PUC will continually monitor the earnings of the utility to make sure that the earnings are within the earnings cap that they place on us in a rate case, so that we're only earning our authorized rate of return and not over-earning, and they'd be able to call us back in and readjust the plan if somehow the plan was going wrong and we were actually making more money than we had anticipated or we were earning more money. So we continue to be regulated in terms of our rates. The public continues to be protected in terms of the rates by the Public Utilities Commission monitoring of the plan throughout its life to make sure that the plan is working. As a part of the plan, there certainly is a possibility that over the course of the 5 years, something would happen, perhaps some sort of a, you know, catastrophic weather occurrence, a cost that was not anticipated, possibly an opportunity to invest in assets that wasn't anticipated. And so the utility would have to propose at the beginning of the plan the circumstances under which they would be able to come back and reopen the plan. We don't want to lock into a five-year plan and then say it can't be reopened under any circumstances because we can't anticipate all the circumstances. But the utility would be required in filing their five-year plan to say these are the circumstances under which we should be able to come back and request, not demand, but request, that the plan be opened up and the rates be adjusted according to whatever circumstance we happen to cite. So that protection is in there for the utilities. There's two really important things that I think Minnesota gets as a policy matter out of this. And one of them is the utility will propose and the PUC will actually conduct a study of performance-based rate making. The possibility of moving from a rate system where we are just paid by every kilowatt hour that we sell, which of course gives us an incentive to sell more kilowatt hours, could be replaced with a performance-based system where we are compensated for performance metrics like reliability, like clean energy, like economic development, and some of the things that we could do. That's a really important part of this plan, that we start moving, kind of put our toe in the water towards performance-based rate making, again, under the supervision of the Public Utilities Commission throughout. The other thing that it does, and you'll see at the end of the bill, it talks about distribution planning. A utility that files a multi-year rate plan will be required to come in and actually produce a plan for their distribution system to modernize the distribution system. This is critical for the utility of the future in order to respond to increasing customer demand for more innovation, different kinds of rate plans for two-way communication, for time-of-day rates, for distributed generation. All of these new things that we're seeing, these new technologies that we're seeing coming into the utility world, require that you strengthen the distribution grid in a way that's different from the traditional distribution grid, which is a one-way system from the substation to your house. And so this bill would for a company that's filing a multi-year plan, would require the utility to do some innovative distribution planning, to modernize the grid, to take advantage of some of these new technologies, and to give our customers the things that they're starting to demand. Those kinds of things aren't happening under the traditional rate case model because it's not something that utilities traditionally did under the rate case model. But that's something that's introduced under this plan, and it's one of the reasons why, while this is not a bill endorsed by the E21 group, but as the E21 group of businesses, environmentalists, customer representatives, and utilities has been meeting – to talk about the utility of the future, one of the things that they're talking about is a way to move into modernizing the grid, taking advantage of some of these new technologies, and working towards performance-based rates. And that's something that happens in this bill if a utility is permitted to come in with, or if a utility does come in with a five-year rate plan, or three-year, four-year. It doesn't have to be five, but up to 5 years. So maybe with that, I'll stop, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Questions, members? All right. Thank you, Mr. Evans. Next, I have Mike Bull from CEE.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Mike Bull. I'm the policy director for an organization known as the Center for Energy and Environment. We're a 35-year-old clean energy nonprofit that specializes in energy efficiency program delivery, financing, technical research, and utility policy. And, Mr. Chair, I was going to testify briefly on both provisions, if that's okay.
Just you can do it now.
Just real quickly, rather than have you call me back.
All right. Very good.
So as I mentioned when I was here before, when we were talking about this about 3 weeks ago, the electric industry in Minnesota and around the country is changing rapidly. The expectations of customers and communities are increasing at the same time that the cost and performance of alternatives available to them, like solar, are rapidly improving. These disruptive technologies are putting increasing strain on the utilities in the way they recover their costs and make investments in their systems. And as part of CEE's regulatory innovation initiative, I co-direct the project that Mr. Evans referenced, known as the E21 initiative, which consists of about 30 stakeholders from a broad cross-section of the public interest coming together to develop recommendations for redesigning the utility regulatory framework to allow utilities to best meet the evolving needs of customers in the 21st century. That's the E21, electricity system for the 21st century. While the two provisions before you today dealing with performance-based multi-year rate plans that Mr. Evans just talked through, and then the energy-intensive trade-exposed customer provision that will be discussed in a moment, they address a couple of the recommendations made by the E21 stakeholders at the end of last year. There isn't any consensus among those stakeholders about these particular legislative initiatives. We haven't been able to come to resolution amongst those 30 stakeholders. For CEE, however, we support both provisions. We think they reflect good faith discussions and negotiations and strike an appropriate balance between consumer protection and the practical realities of the changing industries. For the multi-year rate plan provision, the practical reality is, as Mr. Evans pointed out, that the current way we set rates for our utilities will be increasingly problematic for customers and regulators and utilities as the industry changes. We need to encourage utilities and regulators to innovate around new rate structures and new rate designs. For the energy-intensive trade-exposed customer provision, the practical reality is that if and when these large energy-intensive customers shutter their doors, that impacts all of the customers in the service territory served by the utility that served that customer. And it makes sense to try to make these customers more competitive in a global marketplace under the consumer protection safeguards built into the current proposal. With these safeguards, we could support extending the reach of this provision beyond the Minnesota Power territory, which is the current proposal. Both of these proposals give appropriate guidance and discretion to the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission with regard to implementation, and that's the agency that has the expertise to appropriately implement these two ideas. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to stand for questions, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. Questions, members? All right. Thank you. Next, we have Bill Grant. Members, just so you know, just to preview, there is a change. After Bill Grant will be Ray Smith from the Attorney General's office instead of Ben Gerber. Welcome, Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Bill Grant for the Department of Commerce. I wanted to start by really thanking and applauding Senator Marty for his work on both of the issues that are in front of you. And I'll just to save the committee time, I will try to address both provisions if I can during my time here. Starting with the multi-year rate provisions, the department has worked very closely with Xcel Energy and the other stakeholders on this issue. When we did so, we laid out some minimum expectations for what a change to current form of regulation would entail, and I'm happy to report that these minimum expectations are reflected in this version of the bill. So we're happy with the progress that has been made here. We don't disagree with those, including Xcel Energy, that have raised concerns about the way that rate making has been going of late, and that it is prudent for us to look at alternative forms of regulation as a way of perhaps alleviating some of the issues that have arisen. That said, we want to be sure while we're doing this, since these decisions that occur at the Public Utilities Commission with advice from the department and others involve multi-million dollar decisions affecting ratepayers from the smallest residential customer to the largest industrial customer. And so getting it right and getting the allocation of costs right and equitable is hugely important. And so experimentation should occur within a fairly tight parameter. It also should, as this provision reflects, not be prescriptive with respect to how the commission goes about making decisions in this arena. Some of the earlier versions of the multi-year bill that we saw were, in our view, overly prescriptive, tied the commission's hands in a way that we wouldn't consider to be prudent. This provision avoids a number of those pitfalls. We believe that more work on the multi-year rate plan provisions would be helpful, and we're certainly willing to participate in those conversations as the bill moves forward. With respect to the trade-exposed industries provisions, again, really want to thank Senator Marty for taking on what is a very difficult issue, and we certainly appreciate the concerns that have been raised, as particularly in northeastern Minnesota, as plants have been forced to close and workers have been laid off. And to the extent that these companies are very energy intensive, clearly energy costs play a role in that, although by no means the exclusive role. And so we believe that Senator Marty's done a good job of working with all the parties on this. And again, the language that's in front of you now, we think, is a vast improvement over what had been proposed originally. However, I have to say we still have some concerns that we've voiced consistently throughout this process. Simply put, any time that you propose to give one class of customers a lower rate, the other customers are going to pay more. And that's just the way this works. So we're really concerned that this potentially represents an opportunity for cost shifting from one class of customers to other classes of customers. Because the Department of Commerce also runs the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, we're concerned that a bill like this is going to create extra demand on that program at a time when federal funding for the LIHEAP program continues to decline. We're happy to continue working on these provisions as well, and we look forward to Senator Marty's leadership on this issue. So. with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Grant. Questions, members? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Mr. Smith from the Attorney General's Office. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Ray Smith with the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. As you may know, our office represents statutorily small businesses and residential customers of the Public Utilities Commission. While we did not participate in the E21 process that led to this bill, we have been very involved in the multi-year rate-making proceedings before the commission. And I want to give you, a little bit of background on that. As Mr. Evans from Excel mentioned, you passed that legislation 4 years ago. Since then, we've had one utility that's availed itself of this. And to say that the stakeholders here would like the rate-making process to be improved is probably something we could all agree on. We would disagree on what is the necessary improvement for that. Multi-year rate making is not a panacea. When the commission investigated kind of the criteria and things that we should look at in those proceedings, it cautioned, the parties in its order in docket 12587 to say that multi-year rate plans create burdens. Anticipating costs and revenues arising years into the future create myriad opportunity for error. In particular, it becomes increasingly difficult to ensure that all relevant costs will be considered with the relevant revenues. Moreover, a multi-year rate plan will be challenging to evaluate and administer. I don't think the commission has been proved wrong with that, and expanding it from 3 years to 5 years before we can even say that we're done with the first multi-year rate making plan seems premature. Another concern we have with the bill is that it really does end a pattern in the history of rate regulation in Minnesota of cost-based rates, that utilities are held to account to say that they've incurred prudent costs to provide reliable electric service to their customers. The formula rates or price indices that you hear about really have a tendency to lock in rate increases for as many as 5 years. Again, to quote the commission when they were evaluating multi-year rate-making plans in docket 12587, to the extent that formula rates automatically pass through a utility's costs to ratepayers, these rates reduce a utility's incentive to manage costs. Moreover, formula rates are unnecessary to achieve the purpose of a multi-year rate-making plan. From the other stakeholders, they say that the commission's oversight of the rates will not end and things are not locked in stone. Our concern is that there will be elements of a heads-you-win, tails-we-lose aspect for Minnesota ratepayers here, that if the multi-year rate plan locks in, 5% inflation for salaries for employees for the next 5 years, that rate plan will continue for 5 years. But if unexpected cost increases that weren't in the plan weren't there, that the utilities will come in for rate increases in another venue. And so either way, the rate increases happen. It's an asymmetric approach. Finally, I wanted to speak to the area of the interim rate increase that is in the bill. As the committee knows, our office, has appeared before you with talking about the problems of midterm rates. I testified before this committee a couple years ago with Senator Eaton to try to propose some improvements to the interim rate process. The rate-making process in Minnesota may be cumbersome, it may be time-consuming, but it has resulted in the denial of hundreds of millions of dollars of rate increases that utilities requested in their initial filings. Those utilities received interim rates at very low cost, almost free money, that was ultimately returned to ratepayers well after the fact. Our office has been concerned that interim rates have led to consumers who can't afford it to be banks for the utilities. And to the extent that this bill increases the interim rate process to a second year of the multi-year rate making plan, it makes that problem worse. Those are my remarks, and I'm here to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Questions, members? All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith. All right. And then on this element, the A4, we'll hear finally from Will Phillips from AARP. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. My name is Will Phillips. I'm the state director for AARP Minnesota.
So I think you all are aware we represent Minnesotans 50 years of age and older, roughly 650,000 of them here in the state. And we, too, want to commend Chairman Marty on the work done so far to tackle some of these issues, but I think we find ourselves in a position of concern over many of the provisions of this legislation. Clearly, energy costs are of critical importance to our members, with older Minnesotans spending a much higher proportion of income on energy costs, along with other things, of course, as well. We really think, and I think would agree with many of the comments by the Attorney General, that this is a premature move to really adjust our regulatory framework here in the state. Most of these things, we believe, will reduce the PUC's ability to regulate the cost of providing utility service and would allow higher rates in the future if they're than are currently allowed. AARP believes that the PUC should thoroughly and routinely audit energy utility costs in order to ensure that residential electric rates are no higher than is justified and reasonable based upon the overall cost of providing service. And I think importantly, as we look at this, we see an expansion of surcharges, formula rates, and other mechanisms that could very well put rates on autopilot, and we very much do oppose those. We find in specific a few challenges. One is that a rapid move to a longer multi-year plan only days after the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission approved its first ever two-year rate increase is really, again, premature. We need to let that run its course, evaluate its effectiveness, and any challenges that come with that. Again, we also believe that an expansion of surcharges, riders, trackers, or other cost adjustment mechanisms that provide opportunities to increase utility rates outside of a general rate case are bad policy. We oppose these methods of bypassing a traditional rate case as they can increase rates without taking into account other factors that could, within a rate case, offset and cause for either less of a rate case or weaken the incentive for a utility to be cost efficient. And particularly here I'm talking about the inclusion of distribution in the transmission cost adjustment mechanism. And then finally, to speak to the energy-intensive trade tariff, as Mr. Grant from Commerce said, just the way it works, that if you exempt one rate class, you're going to see impacts elsewhere. And we are highly concerned about the residential customers in the state who, as I mentioned earlier, certainly have a difficult time in many cases paying utility bills. So we do understand that there have been many improvements made in that, but still something that we find ourselves opposing at this point. Again, I think just in closing, we do recognize that the utilities landscape is changing. We realize that customers want different things these days, but for our members, the vast majority of them want the same thing that they've always wanted. They want to be able to turn the lights on or turn the heat on and have reliable utility services that are affordable. So we really do believe that this, we can spend some more time taking a look at this. Clearly, Mr. Bull referenced this and others. The E21 initiative is looking at these efforts as we go. We've just had the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission put in place its first multi-year rate case. We think we need to take some more time to take a look at this. We're happy to participate further in the discussions and appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips, whose organization does not yet represent me, but will later this year.
Beats the alternative,
this is,
right?
This is the year. So I'm looking for that fateful first envelope any day now.
Questions, Mr. Chair, Senator, you can actually join any time.
Oh, well, good to know. All right.
Junior members?
Actually, I was invited 4 years ago because somebody went on my
when you were 24?
Wikipedia page and said, oh, she meets the criteria. And Mr. Chair, if I might ask.
Senator Benson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and I've forgotten the testifier from AARP, Mr. Phillips. You said that they just approved a two-year rate increase. Isn't it true that once rates are in place, they can just stay? So if the rates are high, I believe it wasn't that long ago that we regularly had rates stay in place for a long time, and until the utility came back in, the rates didn't get reviewed. It used to be normal that we had this longer look at rates. So is this really a fundamental change from what we had done not that long ago?
Mr. Phillips.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senator, I think that as we look at a five-year horizon potentially for a multi-year plan, we think that that is a long time with lots of variables that are very difficult to predict. And that in the context of that, if you put in formula rates or other things that essentially happen over time automatically, that is a real challenge. Something that we think the more often that you're able to open up the books and have a thorough audit of all of the costs, all of the revenues, to get the rates aligned with cost as best you can, that is where we're supportive.
Senator Benz.
Mr. Chair, I'm hearing Mr. Phillips advocate for more frequent rate cases. How often is often enough?
Mr. Phillips.
I don't know how often enough is, Mr. Chair, Senator. I would say that as often as we need to make sure that the rates that Minnesotans are paying are fair, are representative of the costs that the utilities incur to serve people. We think that having an adversarial process that you have in Minnesota with a commission that is well-equipped to analyze these issues and come to decisions about what rates should be paid going forward is a positive thing for Minnesota ratepayers.
And
Senator Metz.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Phillips, if the PUC is well-equipped in this adversarial relationship, then don't you think they could handle a multi-year rate case? If they're well-equipped, then all those complexities that you're talking about should be something that they can analyze, evaluate. There's nothing prescriptive that says the PUC must do a five-year plan. They could exercise their judgment. This would simply be an option for the well-equipped PUC sure. to move forward.
Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chair, I understand that. They are able to do much of what's in this legislation currently. We would, argue that if that's the case, they can do up to a three-year multi-year plan now. They could certainly expand the types of recovery that are able through various mechanisms, whether they're surcharges or formula rates, whatever the case might be. Then if they have that capability now, we would question why this legislation is necessary at this point.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, members? Are you done, Senator Benson?
I'm done.
All right. Anything further, members? All right. Thank you, Mr. Phillips. So,
thank you very much.
Senator Marty, I think those are all the folks who specifically wanted to testify on the multi-year rate proposal, although some snuck in some discussion of the energy-intensive trade-exposed issue, but I think the remaining three were specifically on that.
Yeah,
so
Mr.
do we want
Chair,
to
take up? The other three were simply on the other half of it. So if you, I don't mind if we address this amendment now,
sure.
or that makes
All right.
sense.
All right.
Why don't we do that?
A4
with that incorporated change on line 22.
All right. So for members who joined us later, Senator Marty's moved the A4, adjusting the word, deleting the word shall on 1.22 and changing that to the word may. Questions on the amendment or discussion on the A4? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed no. Motion carries. Senator Marty.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then I'll offer the A3 amendment also in the packets, I believe, with one oral change as well, which I will read when you have it out of your packets. And this is in the cost recovery section on page 2, line 19. After incremental costs, I would insert, if it determines that recovery is in the public interest, before the comma. And with that, I would move the amendment and suggest we do the same thing where we have the testimony on it, because, again, I think you heard some of the folks who were testifying about this provision earlier as well. And, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, This is the title suggests is meant to provide an option for a competitive rate for energy-intensive trade-exposed electric utility customers. And the amendment would allow for customers in Minnesota Power Territory would have the ability for some very heavy energy-intensive industries, calling out three of them that have a number of different facilities, large ones, as ones that would qualify, and then also has a provision on line 16 of any other globally competitive electric customer who can demonstrate that a high portion of their cost, 15% or more of their cost of production, is due to energy costs, and that their rates are significantly higher than their competitors, and that those higher rates impede their ability to compete in the global market. If you are one of these types of businesses, you would be able to work with the utility to try and come up with an energy-intensive EITE rate schedule that the commission could approve. And we have, as you can see on line 28, the minimum rate has to be at least covering the incremental cost of providing the service. And then the commission shall approve it if it makes findings that it's in the public interest, based on, I think it's four clauses at the top of page, bottom of page one, top of page two. And the customer is eligible if that is approved by the PUC. The customer is eligible if they can show that they meet the criteria on paragraph B on the first page. That's the part I just mentioned. And the commission would have 120 days to make a determination on this, and it would be filed with the commission. And cost recovery provisions at the bottom. I realize I will suggest that I know I think some of the folks coming to testify are concerned that this does not go as far as they would like it to go. I think this is a major change in the way we've done utility regulation and I think rate setting, and I think there's very reason for caution, as I think the department commented, as I think AARP commented and others have, and that is with electric rates. If somebody's paying less, somebody else is paying more. And I understand, I mean, in the northeastern Minnesota, there are a number of very large businesses. In fact, the language that spells out that this would be Minnesota Power Turf is that investor-owned utility has at least 40% of its load from 15 or fewer customers. I think the reality is they have, it's like about 12 customers that account for, I think it's pretty close to 60% of their overall load. The concern is if these industries are, if they're going out of business or other things, that could push up rates for other customers. So they'd still have to make their case to the PUC on this, but this would give them the ability to get lower rates. It would have to at least cover the incremental cost. But I think some of those who testified already were concerned that this may, in their mind, go too far. I think some of the others, I don't know if they're the other witnesses, they can speak for themselves.
All right. Thank you, Senator Marty. All right. Why don't we go to testimony? I have Drew Marotska from Minnesota Large Industrial Group, MLIG. And Mr. Brandt from the forest industries. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks again. Again, my name is Drew Moratska. I'm an attorney at Stoll Reeves Law Firm, Minneapolis. I do a lot of work before the Public Utilities Commission on a variety of matters, but I'm very involved in utility rate cases, integrated resource plans, rider filings, et cetera, so I'm very familiar with the subject matter. The Minnesota Large Industrial Group is a group of 15 very large, energy-intensive industrial customers that spans multiple utilities, consuming in excess of 6.5 billion kilowatt hours each year and spending more than $350 million on electric energy each year. I'm here today to offer testimony opposing the A3 amendment. Well, we appreciate the efforts of the parties and the chair in continuing to work on the legislation, I want to underscore that we don't feel as though we've been involved in those discussions. The initial draft of the legislation, we did not play a role in, and we received the current A3 amendment for the first time yesterday. So this is not something that we had hands in. And we are concerned that the draft falls short of achieving the intended objectives. Five quick general objections to the A3 amendment. First, it's limited to Minnesota Power. To be sure, the industrial rates in Minnesota statewide are increasingly uncompetitive. We were 15th in 1990. We've gone to 28th by the end of 2014, and that is continued. This is the problem of competitiveness is not exclusively a Minnesota Power problem. It's an Otter Tail Power problem. It's an Xcel Energy problem. The committee may recall that I was here a few weeks ago testifying that Xcel has the highest industrial rates in the state of Minnesota and is in the upper third in the continental U.S. The A2 amendment fails to address this problem. Second, and related to the first objection, the A3 amendment recognizes that a steel mill is energy intensive and trade exposed, but by limiting it to Minnesota Power necessarily excludes the steel mill in St. Paul. This could detrimentally impact jobs in the metro area. In other words, the St. Paul mill, who has employees in Woodbury, in St. Paul, in Inver Grove Heights, could suffer. Here again, the A3 amendment fails to address this problem. Third, there's no time frame to review the EIT rate filing. While the commission has to establish an EIT rate schedule under the draft within 120 days, there is no corresponding time frame for approval of the EIT rate. Having practiced before the commission, I know that sometimes the commission sits on filings for a very long time. I had one such filing that sat at an open docket for over 2 years. The absent time frame is both conspicuous and concerning in this regard. Fourth, the remedy is tied to cost. In years past, we have heard complaints from opponents on cost-based rates legislation claiming that focusing on cost is bad policy. I don't understand why we would now do exactly that. And finally, the A3 amendment contains ambiguous and potentially neutering language. It's unclear why, after weighing a list of factors set forth in Subdivision 2C of the amendment, why, including the potential cost impacts on customers, why we would then turn around and say that rate mitigation is necessary. Sound policy demands a prompt fix to a problem once identified. The problem of competitiveness has been identified. It is undisputed. The bill fails to fix the problem. And with that, I'll stand for questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Moretzka. Questions, members? All right. Thank you. Mr. Brandt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wayne Brandt, Minnesota Forest Industries. Our members are paper mills, sawmills, engineered wood products manufacturers, forest landowners, utility poles, pallets, soup to nuts, pretty much everything you can think of. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I won't repeat either Mr. Moratzka's testimony or the testimony that I provided several weeks ago when Senator Marty's omnibus energy policy bill was moving through this committee, and that included some different language on the EITE issue. I would just point out that some of my members are outside of the Minnesota Power service territory. They would be left behind on that. One of them specifically testified or stated in the DNR's competitiveness study on our industry that at this point in time he couldn't in good conscience recommend that his company make substantial investments in Minnesota because of energy costs, because of wood availability, and a variety of other issues. So I think, as you know, and I've testified before, about 25% of the cost of manufacturing a ton of paper is energy, electricity. The other 25% is labor. Another 25% is wood. And the balance is all the rest of the purchased services, et cetera. In 2002, there was a previous governor's study on our industry's competitiveness, 2003 actually, I believe, and that one showed at that time that we had a significant competitive advantage in the forest products industry over other states and countries in two specific areas. The first was the productivity of our workforce. We believe that that clearly still remains and is an ongoing advantage. The second advantage that we had at that time was in electrical rates. Unfortunately, over the past dozen years, that advantage has eroded very substantially. We've seen an increase in that dozen years of over 70% in industrial energy rates here in Minnesota, and 41 of the states in that time frame have had lower increases than the 71% that we've seen. This is a very significant issue for my members. It needs to be resolved. We hope it will be resolved this year. One little bit of history, just so the committee understands it, and Mr. Muratska made mention of the previous year's cost-based rates legislation, which did not become law, but which we advocated for. I hope the committee is clear that the industrial customers, particularly on the Minnesota power system, subsidize the residentials. We're not asking anybody to subsidize us. We are not in an economic position to continue to subsidize all the other ratepayers to the extent that it's been done in the past through PUC decisions. And on a lighter note, I would just say, Mr. Chairman, it may come as a vast surprise that I am an AARP member. I do qualify. And for the record, I would just say that AARP does not represent my views on this matter. I know that'll be a shock. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Peter Larson from Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. I'm here today for United States Steel Corporation. I want to start out by saying that Chris Masantonio from Pittsburgh and Larry Sutherland from Mountain Iron would love to be here today. They weren't able to come down. It's a very important issue. They've been here before to talk with several of you on this issue, and unfortunately, they couldn't make it today. Just a little bit of a reminder about the impact U.S. Steel has in northeastern Minnesota, and really it's a statewide impact. U.S. Steel has 1,900 employees. They have $150 million in payroll, plus pensions, plus health benefits. They pay $44 million in local taxes, $612 million to vendors, and $55 million into the state school trust last year. 90% of the school trust money came from U.S. Steel. So just in 1 year, paid $55 million into the school trust. About 25% of their production costs are energy. It's a very important issue. The U.S. Steel has been down here a few times this session, more than normal, and started out the session by talking about that 2015 might be a very critical year in Minnesota for mining. They knew a little bit more than they were willing to or able to share publicly. Since then, the idling of Keytec has been announced, and the idling of part of Mintec was announced, and it's clear now that they are saying that this is a very important year for mining in Minnesota. I handed out something to you, but I also wanted to make sure you understood the support of the people in northeastern Minnesota. This isn't just a U.S. Steel or a mining company issue. There's been discussion of how people might react to any sort of cost shifting that will occur, and I just wanted to let you know the folks that have been down here talking about this specific issue to legislators. Bill King was here. He's the mayor of Keewatin. Rick Canada was here. He's the mayor of Hibbing. Ben DiNucci was here. He's the mayor of Nashwauk.
David Lislegard is here. He's the city council person in Aurora. So that's just something I wanted to make sure that the committee knew, is that the people that live in northeastern Minnesota, the representatives of those cities were here to make sure you understood that this isn't just the companies that support this, it's also the local elected officials. But then I wanted to talk about the piece I handed out, I think you might have. It starts with an iron ore price projections sheet. There's a couple things that are interesting here, not only that it goes from higher to lower, from left to right, but you'll see the red line. That's a 2014 Morgan Stanley number. That's what they predicted would be iron ore prices. The blue line is a Citigroup March 2015 projection. Now, when we used we had this prepared before, we had a February projection. That blue line didn't dip below 60. And then we had prepared with a March projection, and you can see it dropped below 60 to just above 50. Well, I don't know what the April Citigroup statement is, but I expect that it's below 50 now into the 40s. So just since we started talking to legislators about this, this has gone from over 60 to well below $50 per ton as a cost, or as a value of a ton of iron ore. If you go to the next slide, the next page, you can see increases that are projected between 2013 and 2019. So you compare the iron ore value to the electric costs, and you can see there's quite a problem here for Minnesota's competitiveness in the world market. And then I think the next two are really the most telling. What you see is bars that represent the relative energy costs of all the U.S. steel facilities. And you can see the two red bars, Minntac and Keetac. This is 2014. When you look at the next page, that's where Minntac and Keetac are in the U.S. steel family through 2019. And really what we're asking for is the opportunity to go to the PUC and try to stop that from happening. We're not trying to refight old battles. We're not trying to reduce what might have happened in 2013 and 14, but we certainly want the opportunity to be able to go and do something about the change that you see represented in these bar charts. It's just a very important thing for the taconite mining industry in Minnesota. Cliffs Natural Resources would be here if they could, and they asked me to just say they would have a similar story for you if they were here.
It's not even germane.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Questions, members? All right, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I will say that I think that the numbers you see here, again, this amendment will give them the chance. Minntac and Keetac would clearly be covered by this legislation. I think it does address this. I think it's an attempt to try and do this cautiously. I think it's a question, again, when Mr. Larson said they've had mayors and city council members come down from that. I think they say they're willing to allow this shift to happen, which up in Minnesota Power territory under this bill would be allowed to happen. I think we all recognize that when some customers get a break, others pay more. I think that the bottom line is you look at the front page of his chart and you see what's happened to iron ore price projections, and I'm not sure that lowering their electric rates is going to deal with international, some would say, dumping issues. But this bill may help them, and I think it's worth a try, and I'm willing to carry this bill, and I think it makes sense, and I'm urging the committee to adopt this amendment.
All right. Thank you. So Senator Marty renews his motion, the A3 amendment, with the change that he described earlier, inserting the words on line 2.19 after cost before the comma if it determines that recovery is in the public interest. Questions, members? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's necessarily a question. I guess I'm somewhat confused, Senator Marty, because it does look like we are creating winners and losers just through the first section, our subdivision. And then you have some testifiers saying that is going to create winners and losers. So I'm not even sure why we even have line 13, 1.13 in there if it is going to create those winners and losers. I guess I'm just thinking that wouldn't it be better to keep your rates consistent and manageable and keep them more as a fixed cost so that there is the ability for these industrial units to actually know what their energy costs are going to be instead of fluctuating all the time. I think that would be a better way to look at it, keep our costs low on our energy instead of carving out all these winners and losers, because I'm looking at the 15%. How many other manufacturers maybe are at 14% and don't quite hit the 15% of their customers' overall cost of production? How many other manufacturing companies are by just having it at Minnesota Power, it really does carve out a whole and leave a whole bunch of other customers behind. And that's just a concern. I'm sorry, Senator Murray, I don't think I can support this unless we had everybody coming up to the table and saying, yeah, this is doable, it's workable, but that's not what I'm hearing.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Rose.
Senator Murray.
A couple of things. One, the whole nature of this EITE thing is going to be picking winners and losers. We're saying that energy-intensive, trade-exposed companies are going to get a break at the expense of other ratepayers. I think that's the nature of what this is. That's the nature of what the Chamber and others have proposed. I think I would guess all the folks from U.S. Steel would much prefer to have this legislation than our current law. They might like it. I mean, I think Chamber and others would like this to be statewide. I think the biggest, Mr. Brandt mentioned, I don't know if he said paper mill or what, in other territory. I'm not sure what industry it is. There's a bowl company north of my district that is a wood product company, but I think these are ones, the 15% was just an attempt to say these are energy-intensive industries, and they still would have to make the showing here. They would have to make a showing that their rates are a significant reason why they can't compete with their international competition. I think this bill is one that's trying to do this cautiously and so on, but it's also trying to recognize that there's some big problems in some territory. And so I think we're trying to do it cautiously, but the direction some of them would like to go, but not nearly as far as they want to go.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's always that conversation about, you know, how complicated cost shifting is and really, but what's worse, sometimes worse is losing load. I think back of the Ford plant, you think back of the Verso. I mean, this, what you're bringing up should drive us to have some deeper conversations again on energy policy and energy and what we're doing in Minnesota. And I'm convinced that, if this drives us in that direction where we can talk about, upward, because, when somebody like the Ford plant or Verso shuts down, you got upward movement, and then you're spreading the kilowatt hours across X amount of people. And I don't know how you create the win-win, John. And I miss Senator Marty, but I does this get us into that right direction? You know, is the timing, why now? And maybe you could expand on that a little bit just so people have a good understanding. So,
sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, I'd say, first of all, Minnesota Power, because, as I said, I don't know what percentage of Xcel's largest customers you'd have to go to get 40% or 50 or 60% of their load, but it's a lot more than a couple dozen. This is one utility that's got a very high percentage of very large customers, and their case about what's happening in the international markets is very real, and I think we should be trying to listen to that. I don't know that if you eliminated their electric costs, all of a sudden they're going to be, who knows? I think this is an attempt to try and say, hey, we would allow you to set up rates where they would be paying only their incremental costs. They have to make the showing to the Public Utilities Commission that's in the public interest. That was in the original bill that Chamber and others had put out, too, that they'd have to make that showing. And I think that that's a reasonable step, and I I'd urge the members to support this.
All right. Further questions, members? Senator Benson, then Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, on the amendment line 18, energy rates are significantly higher than their competitors. Is that something the PUC deals with regularly? So if we're putting this language in, to me, sitting here legislatively, that feels vague. I don't know what significantly higher is, and I don't know what competitors are defined as. Are they competitors within the borders of Minnesota, in which case the rate differential could be a significant issue? Are they competitors nationwide? And the next line we reference global, so I'd like to know if the PUC has already developed regulatory language around significantly higher rates and competitors.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, this would not be the PUC deciding what that is. It would be the utility and its customers trying to demonstrate that they are and convince the commission of that. The commission would do its finding of what's in the public interest, but they would have to show that their competitors are anywhere in the globe. I have a feeling to use the steel, the iron ore things, I mean, I think they would be saying right now, I think it's other factors than energy, but, you know, I think energy is one of the factors, and I think Mr. Larson's chart says that it's becoming a more significant factor, so they can say, look, we're paying significantly more than the lowest cost utility ranking in our country, at least. They'd have to show that it is higher, and they'd have to show that that's a burden on their ability to compete. So the commission would be making the judgment call on they're making their, in the adversarial system, they make the case that we have, this is a burden on our competition.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Marty. I am concerned about an energy advantage to northeastern Minnesota. I think you're on the right track with the general tone of, you know, if we have energy intensive manufacturing and production, that they should be treated differently than regular customers, because they can't go anywhere else for their electricity. They can't bid out to a different supplier. They are trapped with the utility that they provide. But I do have significant concern that one part of the state would get a manufacturing or production energy advantage. And I understand Minnesota Power is rather uniquely situated, but if you're looking at somebody with, say, a concrete milling production development facility, if they want to expand, northeastern Minnesota would be a better place to expand if this law goes into place than perhaps central Minnesota. I get really cautious about carving out parts of this state for advantages.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I think the difficulty, if you see the rate increases that U.S. Steel is projecting up in Minnesota Power territory, you see that I'm not sure you'd have a lot of incentive for people in other communities to be moving up there for the hope that they would qualify for a lower rate because of this. And like the current law does give, I think it's 216B162 or something, there is a provision in the law already that Gerdau Steel, I think in the East Metro area, has gotten lower rates because of competitive thing. That's already in the law. This is making it a little bit easier for some of these folks to get a rate break based on this. Again, when you said that businesses are stuck with the rates in the place where they are, so are all our residential customers as well. So I think it would behoove us to go slowly into this direction.
Senator Benz.
And Mr. Chair, as far as consumers versus businesses, if you have a capital intense business, you really can't move that to a different area. And people don't make home purchase decisions based on the electric rates in that area.
we have our state divided up, and really businesses have very little flexibility if they're going to remain profitable when it comes to energy. And so I appreciate what you're trying to do. I carried the cost-based rates bill. I understand what Minnesota Power went through with a particular rate case that is driving some of this. Right now I'm leaning to supporting it because I have a great deal of empathy for those businesses, but I'm really concerned. And we'll be watching closely to see what comes next.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Senator Benson. I have mixed feelings about this bill. I have great empathy for the steel industry. I come from an area that can have wide swings in its economic base, its chief economic base, that being agriculture. And quite frankly, being a border community, I've also seen what the lack of competitiveness can do to industry and to employers in our area as we've watched the moving vans go across state lines and reduce the number of available jobs in the decades before. I think that one of the concerns I have here is that we are not making this a broader adjustment, because now what we're doing is we're creating, if we look at Mr. Brandt's clients there, you have the luck of the draw that you have one particular supplier of electricity as opposed to another, and now we're creating some severe economic disadvantages within our state border, not even worrying about the competition across the country. And I think that's a very unfair situation for those customers. And, quite frankly, I guess until the vote is called for, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to go. But I think it is not right in what we're doing here if this does pass.
All right. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, again, if I'm a customer of one utility and you're a customer of another one, our rates are going to vary for a whole range of things, and I understand that. I mean, the whole issue, the whole reason we regulate utility electric power is because you can't have 10 electric poles going to every house. You can't have that going to every business. We're trying to find a way to address some of the big concerns that I think U.S. Steel and others are seeing up north, and the paper mills and so on. Again, I'm still open to discussing this further. I just think that saying we're going to do this statewide right now is not a wise move. And I have real concerns about the kind of rate impacts. Anyway, Mr. Chair, I'll move the three amendments.
Senator Benson wanted to.
Mr. Chair, I just had a query for Senator Marty. What if you had two plants, one inside this special electric district and one inside, and you had to make an expansion choice, or you had to consolidate because production was declining? That does put this region at an advantage for either job growth or job rescue. And so I think, again, I am inclined to respect Mr. Chair's decision and support him on this, but I would like some attention paid going forward.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Benz, I'll discuss that issue further with you. I cannot picture, some of the large energy-intensive folks really, some of them do have the ability to move and so on, which is why the cost-competitive statute we already have is there. A lot of others, they really couldn't move. And again, I think the reason you have these huge industrial customers in Minnesota Power Territory isn't because Minnesota Power Territory has been so great for them. It's just that's where the iron ore is. That's where the paper pulp comes from. Anyway, I'm happy to talk more about that as we go.
All right, thank you. So Senator Marty renews his motion to move the A3 amendment with the modification that was described earlier. Anything further, members?
Senator Rosen? Senator Marty, where did the 15% come up with? Why wasn't it 10%, 15%,
18%? Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, that was trying to look at, I think Louisiana has a 30% not counting feedstock, meaning the materials, the raw material going into the product. Some of the folks in some of these industries had proposed a 10%. And I think it's sort of in that range where you want to do it. You don't want to have, I mean, every business uses electricity. Every household uses electricity. What's the ones where you're trying to have more significant level? It's somewhat arbitrary. I think that 30% would be fairly steep and exclude too many. I think 15% will allow the biggest ones. But I'll say it's somewhat arbitrary. And the proponents from the chamber, I think, had proposed, or I don't know, maybe paper industry had proposed 10 or so percent. But again, the paper mills, I think they're, Mr. Brandt can correct me, but I think they're like 25, 30% of their cost of production goes into their energy costs.
All right. Anything further on the A3 members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion carries. Senator
Mr.
Marty.
Chair, I'll move the bill be as amended, be recommended pass. I know this it would go to the floor, but it will be stopped in the Rules Committee. But that's what it would happen.
Okay. All right. So Senator Marty moves Senate File 1735 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Senate floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I believe this is our last hearing. I don't think we have any more confirmations or anything.
So, all right. With that, we are adjourned.